Verse 31, Jehoahaz was 23 years old when he began to reign. Jehoahaz, who's that? Well, if you remember, good King Josiah, he had some sons who were not so good. I don't know how else to say it. He gets into a battle with Pharaoh Necho, I think ill-advised. And he's wounded. And verse 30, his servants carried him in a chariot, dead from Megiddo, and brought him to Jerusalem and buried him in his own sepulcher. And the people of the land took Jehoahaz, the son of Josiah, anointed him and made him king in his father's stead. He's not the oldest son. I think the oldest one was more mild-mannered, and the people didn't want him. So they took the second oldest. So Jehoahaz was 23 years old. He reigned 3 months. Okay? You say, well, see, God had a belly full and says, I've had enough of you, and just a little short reign. Yeah, but remember, the longest reign of any king was Manasseh. And we'll see again. He'll be referred to as, this is the reason you're going into Babylonian captivity. It's surely not because Josiah was king. So he's three. He has a three-month reign. His mother's name was Hamutai, the daughter of Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna. So this isn't Jeremiah the prophet. It's Jeremiah of Libna, and he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all his fathers had done. And Pharaoh Necho put him in bands at Riblah. So 3 months, and he takes him off and says, because you can remember, Pharaoh just wiped out Josiah, and he had, I say again, he had no right being in that battle. Pharaoh Necho put him in bands at Riblah in the land of Hamath, that he might not reign in Jerusalem, and put the land to a tribute of 100 talents of silver and a talent of gold. When this was written, 100 talents of silver is $528,000, and a talent of gold is $192,000. So it's hundreds of thousands, almost 700, over a little over 700,000, but you know, more. And of course, you can't really write that in a Bible, because by the time it's published, and gold's through the roof right now, and it's still doing good. Verse 34, and Pharaoh Necho made Eliakim. Now, Eliakim's going to have a name change. So you got to take all this down and remember it all. There will be a test. Pharaoh Necho made Eliakim, the son of Josiah, king in the room of Josiah, his father, and turned his name to Jehoiakim, and you remember that name, and took Jehoahaz away, and he came to Egypt and died there. So we have king number one deposed, a king number two set up by the king of Egypt. And Jehoiakim gave the silver and gold to Pharaoh, but he taxed the land to give the money. Now, I know none of you can relate to this. There's a deficit, so they tax the people. I know. Just try to imagine it. I know it's out there. He taxed the land to give the money according to the commandment of Pharaoh. He exacted the silver and the gold of the people of the land, of everyone according to his taxation, to give it unto Pharaoh Necho. So now when you go into battle, think about that. You know, one, it's going to cost money. Two, you're going to pay when you lose. And three, the people in your kingdom are going to absorb the cost. So Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Zebudah, the daughter of Pedaiah of Rumath. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his fathers had done. In his days, Babylonian captivity. Okay? Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up, and Jehoiakim became his servant 3 years. Then he turned and rebelled against him. So there was a siege. They broke in. You know, everything went bad. Okay, we're going to let you live. You're going to pay me tribute. And he did for 3 years, and then the rebellion came. And the Lord sent against him bands of the Chaldees and bands of the Syrians, bands of the Moabites and bands of the children of Ammon, and sent them against Judah to destroy it according to the word of the Lord which he spake by his servants, the prophets. Surely at the commandment of the Lord came this upon Judah to remove them out of his sight for the sins of Manasseh according to all that he did. Now in the first time Nebuchadnezzar comes up, he takes hostages, okay, Daniel and his friends, among, I think they were royalty, by the way. You remember Hezekiah was prophesied that his descendants would become eunuchs in the palace of Babylon when the Babylonian, they came and they checked them all out. And he said, well, I showed them all the treasure of my house and all this stuff. And now it's come to pass. Verse 3 again, surely the commandment of the Lord came this upon Judah, remove them out of his sight for the sins of Manasseh according to all that he did, because his wickedness was exceedingly wicked. When Josiah repents and leads the children of Israel in godliness and reforms, God said, remember Huldah the prophetess said, okay, this is good. You're going to see peace. You're going to go down to your grave in peace. But no, God's not going to turn back. A bridge too far is what we've been calling it. It's how many people did he, the blood was, flowing in Jerusalem and innocent people were getting killed. His own sons, son caused he go pass through the fire to Molech. That was happening in, you know, when we think of how many 50, 60 million, million babies have been aborted in America, and I always like to think, if somebody's been involved in something like that, of course there's forgiveness. Of course if anyone's in Christ, they're a new creation. All things have passed away. All things have come. We know that. But there's still, think about all the ones who haven't repented. It's not under the blood. It's out there. It's in the face of God. Like, hey, what are you going to do about it? Oh, we're going to find out. Now, will he have one more outpouring? He said, where are we on God's prophetic timeline as far as where are we in as far as judgment? I'm hoping our grandchildren aren't talking Chinese. I don't know what to tell you. Are we going to see it in our day? Boy, we've seen some stuff that I was wondering, this is definitely the judgment of God. This is crazy. I've never seen anything like this. You want to be wicked like Manasseh, you can choose to do whatever you want, but you can't choose the punishment. Yeah, Manasseh repented, you say. Yep, he did. I think he was a good and godly grandfather to young Josiah. I think that's one of the reasons Josiah was so good and godly. But there's still, and also for the innocent blood that he shed, for he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, which the Lord would not pardon. It's hard to imagine. Isn't that hard to imagine? God would not pardon? I don't know that in my life. You know what I mean? He's taken my sins. He's separated them from me as far as the east is from the west. He's put them in the depths of the ocean. Yeah, he put up a no fishing sign right there. They're not coming back on me. That's my sins. It's hard to imagine the Lord not forgiving. Here, it's like, nope. I put it this way. At some time, it starts to rain. And God closes the door of the ark. Oh, yeah, anyone could have came. Come on aboard. Plenty of room. Plenty of food. Just come on board. Oh, you won't? Okay. Well, it's starting to rain. Now, the rest of the acts of Jehoiakim and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? So Jehoiakim slept with his fathers, and Jehoiachin, his son, reigned in his stead. Okay. So there's four godless kings after Josiah. Jehoahaz, Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and Zedekiah. This is the second one during the Babylonian captivity. The first one, Nebuchadnezzar came up when his father was, and now this is, he's going to rebel and he's going to get another visit. Jehoiakim slept with his fathers. Jehoiachin, his son, reigned in his stead. The king of Egypt came not again anymore out of his land, for the king of Babylon had taken from the river of Egypt unto the river Euphrates all that pertained to the king of Egypt. Jehoiachin was 18 years old when he began to reign. He reigned in Jerusalem 3 months. And his mother's name was Nehushta, the daughter of Elnathan of Jerusalem. He did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father had done. At that time, the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came up against Jerusalem, and the city was besieged. Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came against the city, and the servants did besiege it. And Jehoiachin, the king of Judah, went out to the king of Babylon, he and his mother and his servants and his princes and his officers. And the king of Babylon took him in the eighth year of his reign. 3 months, Nebuchadnezzar showed up because Jehoiakim had rebelled. You remember? He served 3 years, then he turned and rebelled against him. Well, he died about the same time, so his son came, became his. And so by the time Nebuchadnezzar shows up, he had only reigned 3 months, but it was a worthless 3 months because he was evil anyway. So they went out to him instead of, you know, the siege and everything else. They probably hadn't built up the wall from last time, and okay, this is going to go bad, so he just went out to him. He carried out thence all the treasures of the house of the Lord. And it's kind of like Nebuchadnezzar. You want to mess with him? I wouldn't. He's in all the Daniel. He throws everyone in the fire and turns their house into a dunghill. Okay? I ain't playing with you. He's a rough character. And so he's saying, yeah, we're rebelling. We ain't. Those hostages he carried off didn't mean anything. So he comes back and he exacts his vengeance. He sets up another king who's a vassal king, and he makes him take an oath by the Lord. It says in Chronicles, but it won't say it here. But he carried out thence all the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house, and cut in pieces all the vessels of gold which Solomon, king of Israel, had made in the temple of the Lord, as the Lord had said. And he carried away all Jerusalem, all the princes, all the mighty men of valor, even 10,000 captives, all the craftsmen and smiths. None remained save the poor sort of the people of the land. And he carried away Jehoiachin to Babylon, the king's mother, and the king's wives, and his officers, and the mighty of the land. Those carried he into captivity from Jerusalem to Babylon. Hey, can you hear me now? I meant what I said. You're going to be paying me tribute. You're not going to rebel, etc., etc. And all the men of might, even 7,000, and craftsmen and smiths, 1,000, all that was strong and apt for war, even then the king of Babylon brought captive to Babylon. So the temple is sacked, and all those drinking vessels that Belshazzar is going to be using later on, the handwriting on the wall scene from Daniel, all that's taken into Babylon. It gives you a list of the things that were taken away. The ark, no. There's different ideas where that is. The official Jewish, yeah, it's under the Temple Mount. Don't you worry about it. Sealed. Nobody knows. We know where it is. You don't know where it is. Carried off in Ethiopia. The Ethiopians think that they have it. You say, well, that's provably wrong. No, it's not. There's a legend that when the Queen of Sheba came to Solomon and he gave her all that was in her heart, also a baby, and that there's a whole, and then the ark went down. No, that's provably wrong, but it could have went down later on, alternate route. There's evidence that it was there at one time. Who knows? It depends. You know, a lot of people have a lot of different sayings about it and stuff like this. I can give you some nice things to listen to on the internet. But anyway, it didn't go to Babylon. But everything else did. And look what it keeps saying about the men of might, even 7,000. Look at verse 14, the mighty men of valor. That was a wonderful army at one time. And now it's gone. Sin is just, it's just the payments you make for sin. It didn't have to happen. All you gotta do is keep serving God, every king, every successive king. Okay, you have a little glitch, you do something bad, and you ask forgiveness, you bring the pauper sacrifice, and you go on. Rebellion against God, witchcraft, causing child sacrifice, all the And the king of Babylon, so this is the second time he comes, the king of Babylon made Mattaniah, his father's brother's king in his stead, and changed his name to Zedekiah. We've heard of Zedekiah. We haven't heard of Mattaniah. So we have kings, and you know, a king can change the subject's name, and I think they do it just to tweak them and just to let them know, hey, I'm the boss now, and this is your new name. But he made him take an oath. Again, it says that in Chronicles, by the Lord, that he wouldn't rebel. So Zedekiah's got a problem. He's one, he's evil. He's got Jeremiah constantly talking to him about, okay, forget it. It's going to go very bad. It's going to go bad for the city. Just go out to Nebuchadnezzar, and the city at least will be saved. It won't be sacked. It won't be... you got to remember, in that last siege... a third was given to the sword, a third to pestilence, and a third was taken off into captivity. That was Ezekiel's prophecy that it would happen that way. Did it happen that way? I bet right to the very person. And that is all the ones who are left over that weren't cannibalized or whatever. It was a horrific time. You know, when you think about that, then now think about sin. And it's dramatic payment. It's you know, I don't think any of us are like, well, forget it. I'm not serving God at all. I don't care. I'm just going to do things my way. Wednesday night, why are we here? I mean, if we're doing things our way. But I'm just warning you, because sin can be like, it can sneak up on you. It's not like we go through the process saying, I'm not serving you anymore, God, or anything else. But, you know, Satan, he's just crafty, and he shows us, he scenarios us rosily. Can I put it that way? Okay. So now we have a new king, Mattaniah, who's called Zedekiah. Now we have, before this, we have the ministry of Jeremiah, but now notably so. Zedekiah was 21 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna, same as the other one, okay? The same as Jehoiakim's father, because it's his uncle. Now, by the way, when God refers to him, he never calls him king. He calls him the prince. See, the king of Babylon made Mattaniah his father's brother king in his stead. So it's the uncle of the king he just took off into captivity. So he's not... okay. Zedekiah was 21 years old, beginning he reigned 11 years. His mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna, and he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord according to all that Jehoiakim had done. Why? Doesn't anyone get the message? No. No. I see somebody make disastrous choices. I see their life just go up in smoldering ashes. And, you know, so if you're sane, you'll say, oh, I don't think I'll do that. That didn't work out very well at all. We have enough signposts. You look at somebody like Lot's wife, and we're told in the New Testament, remember Lot's wife, right? What do we need to remember about Lot's wife? Well, she was in Sodom. And her heart was transfixed by that wicked lifestyle. And I don't think she took a little peek back. She looked back longingly. I think it was like, oh, are you kidding me now? And what happened? She became a signpost. Okay, it was a pillar of salt. But why a pillar of salt? So that we'd remember... No, guard your heart. Don't let these things creep in. And there's enough signposts historically, but there's enough in our life. I think drugs are a good one. I was talking to a guy last week. He had Narcaned the same guy four times within 24 hours. I think zero will be my number. I'm very, very hopeful. But one, I think I'll go, that ain't never going to happen again. Four times? the signposts, and still we make decisions that are okay. For through the anger of the Lord it came to pass in Jerusalem and Judah until he had cast them out of his presence that Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. Okay, chapter 25, last chapter. We got this. And it came to pass in the ninth year of his reign, the tenth month and the tenth day of the month, that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came, he and all his host, against Jerusalem, and pitched against it, and they built forts against it round about. So he says, no, I ain't serving the king of Babylon. After he had taken an oath in the name of the Lord that he would, and the intrigue is, okay, let's hook up with Egypt and we'll rebel against him. That's a bad idea. Judah and Egypt both cannot take on Nebuchadnezzar. That's a mighty empire at this time. In the Battle of Carchemish, when Pharaoh Necho went out against Babylon with the remnants of the Assyrian Empire. It wasn't the old Assyrian. It was, you know, it had been beat down. You remember when they went to Hezekiah, 165 or 185,000, I can't even remember. I think it was 165,000 died in one night. So they were, their empire was, you know, it wasn't quite what it used to be. But now they're going with Egypt against Babylon. What happens? They lost. They lost. That's historical. It's not in the Bible, but they lost. And now they're going to, so Zedekiah is saying, oh yeah, me and Pharaoh Necho hook up. We'll be, no, no. And all of, that's what Jeremiah is about. Large, if you went through the study with me on Sunday nights, there's a large portion of that was about that very thing. And Jeremiah is saying, it's not going to stand. It's not going to work. You have to go out. You're going to, it's going to go bad. And now if you go out and give yourself up, well, but if you don't, oh, it's just the city's going to be burned. And it, read Lamentations. It went very, very bad. After all the starvation and the privations and the disease that goes with that. And, you know, and again, you know, we're talking about cannibalism, just the worst. Okay, in the ninth year of his reign, the tenth month, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came. He and all his hosts against Jerusalem pitched against it. They built forts against it round about, and the city was besieged unto the 11th year. Where's again? In the tenth month of the tenth day of the month. In the ninth year, tenth month, tenth day, the city was besieged unto the 11th year. Oh, my goodness, that was a long. On the ninth day of the fourth month, the famine prevailed in the city, and there was no bread for the people of the land. Give up. Go give up. They got food out there. And the city was broken up. All the men of war fled by night by the way of the gate between two walls, which is by the king's garden. So they didn't really care about the people of the land. They had their own, you know, thing going. Now the Chaldees were against the city round about, and the king went the way toward the plain. So much for the captain going down with the ship, right? And the army of the Chaldees pursued after the king and overtook him in the plains of Jericho, and all his army was scattered from him. You can't think that that, like David's army, would have been scattered from him. But David would never have got himself in a situation. So they took the king and brought him up to the king of Babylon, to Riblah, and they gave judgment upon him. And they slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes and put out the eyes of Zedekiah and bound him with fetters of brass and carried him to Babylon. So Ezekiel had prophesied that he was going to go to Babylon, but he was never going to see Babylon. Read the fine print. Here they ripped his eyes out. Did he go to Babylon? Yeah. Did he see Babylon? No. Imagine the last thing you see is your children being slaughtered before your eyes. Again, the wages of sin. I know, this is a real fun thing. You say, Adam, I could have stayed home. I'm just doing the next verse and the next verse. And I can't really put a lot of levity into it. It's not. It doesn't really call for that. This is just grim and gets grimmer. It's just, it's not fun. But I think God is very good in showing us what really happened. And, you know, I have said before, choose to sin, choose to suffer. Is Scripture bearing that out? Yeah. Yeah, we can choose to rebel against God. Can we choose how God's going to punish it? Not at all. Will it be famine? Well, I'll tell you what, it'll be a famine of the Word of God. He's not going to bless our rebellion. The sin of rebellion is the sin of witchcraft. Will there be dearth and pestilence and a lot of innocent people getting wiped out? And not all the people in Babylon were evil people, but they all got affected by the evil. That's why evil's so evil, because innocent people get, you know, caught in the crossfire. You know, you think you have some gangs in some urban city, Chicago, let's say, and there's, you know, drive-by shootings, and, you know, you're on my turf, and you don't think you can sell drugs here. I'm selling drugs here, and this is, you know, so your gang is infringing on my gang's territory. It's drive-by shooting, where a child gets shot and killed. Has that ever happened before? Yeah, it's happened before. Was that child, that little tiny five-year-old involved in the drug traffic? No, not so you'd notice. But that's how sin is. That's how sin is. Innocent people get hurt. One can think of the, you know, child trafficking. Sin is wicked. Sin is sinful. And you say, Adam, we don't, I'm not suggesting anyone, you guys are involved in drug wars because of your gang, and I'm not saying anyone here is child trafficking. We're not saying that. We're just saying, I'm just drawing a picture. Sin equals suffering. And the best thing we can do is get as far from sin in our personal life and then advocate, like, God, be merciful. Change lives. Change hearts. You know, I was saying abortion is a wicked thing. You're saying, well, no pushback there, Adam. I think we're all on the same page about that. Yes, we are. Not everyone is. So I was doing the CRD program when it was Seven Oaks still. I was going out when they lived out in Winterport, and I was going to teach them. You know, everyone coming to that program was pro-choice. Everyone. Because they're all out there messing around and stuff, and what, you're what? Oh, well, here's a few hundred dollars. Take care of it. They were all pro-choice. They're in the program for some time. Are they still pro-choice? No. What happened? Because they turned their lives to God, and they realize who God is, and he's the Lord and giver of life. You can sit there, you know, with the signs and protests, and there's a place for all that. I'm not saying anything like that is wrong, but you want to change lives. Stop by changing their eternity, and then they're immediately pro-life. They are pro-sin in a lot of ways. And then, you know, as they turn to the Savior, well, there you go. Where am I? Okay, city man, they ripped out his eyes in verse 7. Yeah, like I say, fun stuff. Verse 8, in the fifth month, on the seventh day of the month, which is the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, a servant of the king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem. He burnt the house of the Lord and the king's house and all the houses of Jerusalem, and every great man's house burnt he with fire. And all the army of the Chaldees that were with the captain of the guard break down the walls of Jerusalem round about. We ain't besieging us again. This is the third time. Okay, you lose. You got no wall now. Next time we want to take it, we're just going to march right in. No problem. Now the rest of the people that were left in the city and the fugitives that fell away to the king of Babylon with the remnant of the multitude, Nebuzaradan and the captain of the guard carry away. That was the third, by the way, according to Ezekiel's prophecy. But the captain of the guard left of the poor of the land to be vine dressers and husbandmen. Now the guy doesn't own squat. Now all of a sudden he has a vineyard. Or he's a grower, a husbandman, right? Why? Because he still wants the land to be productive. He still wants to benefit from it. And the pillars of brass that were in the house of the Lord, and the bases and the brazen sea that were in the house of the Lord, did the Chaldees break in peace and carry the brass of them to Babylon. They'd already carried a lot of the other stuff away, you remember. How old was the temple by the time it's ruined? 400 years. 400 years. And the pots and the shovels, and of course it would be rebuilt. The start of it, 70-ish years after this time. By the way, the 70 years of captivity were to the day, okay? Scripture bears that out, to the day. God's timekeeping is very exact. And then it's rebuilt, and that second temple, that's the one that Jesus visited, and it was rebuilt, but Nehemiah's temple, you know, the one that when they came back and rebuilt the temple, that's the one Jesus visited. And it was, like I said, rebuilt again, not from the ground up, but wonderfully adorned. King Herod, Herod the Great, the one who killed all the babies in Jerusalem. Okay, he was a madman, but he was a builder, okay? Crazy, sinful, wicked, and genius builder. I'm sorry, sometimes things work out that way, right? Okay, they break in pieces, carried the brass of them to Babylon, the pots, the shovels, the snuffers, them in verse 14, and the spoons and all the vessels of brass with which they ministered took they away. Because at this point, they'd already taken all the gold, so now they're down to brass, right? And the fire pans and the bowls and such things that were of gold in gold and of silver in silver, the captain of the guard took away, and the two pillars, one sea, and the bases which Solomon had made for the house of the Lord, the brass of all these vessels was without weight. It was so much. The height of the one pillar was 18 cubits, and the chapiter upon it was brass, and the height of the chapiter 3 cubits, and the wreathen work and the pomegranates upon the chapiter round about all of brass, and like unto those had the second pillar with wreathen work. What were the names of the pillars? What? Yeah, yes, Boaz and Yakin, I think is how it's pronounced, G-A-C-I-N in our Bibles, yeah. What does it mean? Yes, you move right up to the front here. You can get in the front row. Everyone can get in the front row. It's wide open, always has been. I don't know if anyone sat there. Boy, if somebody came to church and sat right there, I think I'd pass out. But anyway, that's a story for another time. And the captain of the guard took Seraiah, the chief priest, and Zephaniah, the second priest, and the three keepers of the door. And out of the city he took an officer that was set over the men of war, and 5 men of them that were in the king's presence, which were found in the city, and the principal scribe of the host, which mustered the people of the land, and 80 men of the people of the land that were found in the city. And Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, took these and brought them to the king of Babylon, to Riblah. The king of Babylon smote them and slew them at Riblah in the land of Hamath, so Judah was carried away out of their land. So if you were part of that kingly, oh, you're the high priest, so how come you didn't tell him to give up? How come you didn't tell him to surrender? Oh, you were part of that. So he punishes them all. He makes sure none of them get by. What about Jeremiah? Well, you know, in the end of the book of Jeremiah, they treat him like with courtesy and respect. You remember Nebuzaradan says to him, hey, go where you go, want to go. You want to come to Babylon? Here we have plenty of room. We'll treat you real good. We'll make sure you get plenty of provisions. You want to go stay here in the land? Hey, it's up to you. He was a really good guy. And they're like, the king did not like rebellion. And was Jeremiah advocating rebellion? Not at all. And the people that went over to the Babylonians, they told him, well, Jeremiah's in there. He's telling everyone they got to come out here and give themselves up. So they knew who Jeremiah was. So in the king of Babylon, all these guys who were a handful of, you know, problem children, the king of Babylon smote them, slew them at Riblah in the land of Hamath. So Judah was carried away out of the land. And for the people that remained in the land of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had left, even over them he made Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, ruler. Gedaliah is kind of a good guy. He had always listened to Jeremiah. He should be more cynical. He should watch over his shoulder. He should, and he's not. He's too trusting, but he's a decent guy. And when all the captains of the armies, they and their men, heard that the king of Babylon had made Gedaliah governor, there came to Gedaliah to Mizpah even Ishmael the son of Nethaniah and Johanan the son of Kareah and Seraiah the son of Tanhumeth, and the Netophathite, and Jaazaniah, the son of a Machathite, I'm getting all these wrong, they and their men. And Gedaliah sware to them and their men and said unto them, fear not, to be the servants of the Chaldees, dwell in the land, serve the king of Babylon, shall be war with you. What's wrong with that? That's what the promise was. So Gedaliah is doing a good work, right? He wasn't the one who rebelled. But it came to pass in the seventh month that Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, the son of Elishama, of the seed royal. So he's a prince. He's I don't think he's a direct descendant, but he's a cousin or an in-law. So he's of the seed royal, right? How come I'm not the boss? How come I don't get to be king? How come they set up Gedaliah? You're going to be the king of what? You know, is the answer there. But he's and of the seed royal came and 10 men with him and smote Gedaliah that he died. And the Jews and the Chaldees that were with him at Mizpah. Oh, so now he's killing Chaldeans too? That's a bad idea. So, you know, it just on and on it goes. You remember in the book of Jeremiah, so there was a band, they went, we're going to, so tell us what does God want us to do? So, okay, I'll prophesy to you. Let me have a few days. He comes back like 10 days later and says, whatever you do, don't go down to Egypt. God won't bless you in Egypt. He wants you to stay here. He wants you to tend the land. He wants you to, you know, pay whatever tribute to the king of. And so they said, okay, forget it. We're going to, you're lying to us. You're not telling us what God really wants to do. He wants us to go to Egypt. So they went to Egypt, and they took Jeremiah with them. If it wasn't so sad, it would almost be laughable. Does anyone here make a good choice? Yeah, Gedaliah. And what did he get for his troubles? Death. So they killed the Jews that were with Gedaliah and the Chaldees that were with him at Mizpah, and all the people, both small and great, and the captains of the armies arose and came to Egypt, for they were afraid of the Chaldees. And it came to pass in the 37th year of the captivity of Jehoiachin, king of Judah, in the 12th. Now it's going to try to give us a little bit of a happy ending. I think it's like, you know, it reminds me of like, you know, those chalk outlines where somebody dies and they put the chalk outline. It reminds me of putting a smiley face on one of them. It's kind of like too little, too late. You know, I mean, so it kind of gives us the chronicler here tries that. Well, it's not all as bad as it sounds, and here's why. It came to pass in the 37th year of the captivity of Jehoiachin, king of Judah, in the 12th month, on the 27th day of the month, that Evil-Merodach, who names their kid that? It must mean something okay in Babylonian, right? He's the king of Babylon after Nebuchadnezzar, okay? This is, I think it's his direct son, because I think it's only like three generations. I think Belshazzar, I think, was Nebuchadnezzar's grandson, if I remember, because the queen mother's still around, and she's summoned in the, remember the handwriting on the wall incident? So I think Evil-Merodach is, but I could be wrong about that. I don't know how much it matters to you. On the 720th day of the month, Evil-Merodach, king of Babylon, in the year that he began to reign, did lift up the head of Jehoiachin, king of Judah, out of prison, and he spake kindly to him. He's not the blind one, okay? It would be his uncle, Zedekiah. This is a direct descendant of Josiah. He spake kindly to him and set his throne above the throne of the kings that were with him in Babylon and changed his prison garments, and he did eat bread continually before him all the days of his life. And he had children, because we read about that in the book of Ezra, when, or it might be in Nehemiah, I can't remember, when they're chronicling all that, and we'll read about it in the New Testament, in the book of Matthew, specifically, was talking about the genealogy of Jesus Christ. He had children, and they did. This one here is called, by Jeremiah, Jeconiah, and sometimes Coniah. And there's a blood curse on him from the book of Jeremiah. None of your children will prosper forever. his Jesus' father, Joseph, was under that blood curse. You say, well, it would have been passed on to Jesus. No, it was a blood curse. Jesus being the legal son of Joseph, but not the blood descendant of him, the curse didn't come on Jesus, obviously. Anyway, so this guy was bad news, but here he gets a break. They changed his prison garments. He did eat bread continually before him all the days of his life. His allowance was a continual allowance given to him on the king, of the king, a daily rate for every day, all the days of his life. Now, we read chapters like this, we're thinking, what is going on here? Look, all it is, as I explained, and it just chronicles out the end of the kingdom, because we were in Kings, 2 Kings, and after this time, this is the end. There's no more kings in Judah. When they come back, they, you know, there's a little time when they try to, they come back, but they're still under, Darius the Mede. And then, it's Artaxerxes, and then, but there's always, and then there's, after their empire falls to the Greek Empire, they're under Greek and rule, and then there's, the four generals of Alexander, and then there's all, and then time of the Maccabees, they rebel for a short time. But at the time when Jesus is born, it's still that post-Babylonian exile, and there's, now at this time, Rome's the big gorilla on the block, and there's not a king. And they always ask him, you're going to bring the kingdom? You remember, because it's in their hearts, they always want to have that kingdom back. And it's never again are they self-governing until May 14th, 1948. Not in my lifetime, not in yours, but shortly before our lifetimes. And now they're autonomous because they don't have a king right now. They will, because God promised them a king forever. David's throne is going to be established forever. Okay, there's a little gap in that forever where, but that's going to happen. By the way, that was promised. People don't believe in the kingdom. The majority of what we call Christendom doesn't believe in the kingdom. That's sad. Gabriel promised it to Mary. He shall sit upon his father's David's throne. Is Jesus on the throne right now? Yes. The right hand of God. Is it David's throne? No, David ruled in Jerusalem. I don't know if we covered that in the text at all. David's throne is an earthly throne. And Gabriel, unless he got it wrong, Jesus is destined to sit on that throne. Is that going to happen? Yeah. Okay, we're all done. 2 Kings.